Thank you, Ms. Wesley, also.
Okay, so the last case for argument is Scaife versus Cook County. Ms. Dwyer.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Charmaine Dwyer. I represent Plaintiff Appellant Samuel Scaife in this appeal. Mr. Scaife, who is African-American, has been employed by the sheriff of Cook County of Illinois since 1988, and the events which led to this lawsuit occurred while Mr. Scaife was working in the Cook County Sheriff's Department of Community Supervision and Intervention, which is known as DCSI, where Mr. Scaife holds the position of investigator. Mr. Scaife is requesting the court in this appeal to reverse the district court's June 28, 2004 decision granting summary judgment with respect to his claims against his claims that defendants Michael Sheehan in his official capacity and William Wallace, deputy executive director of DCSI, in his individual capacity, discriminated against him because of his race and retaliated against him for complaining about unlawful discrimination in violation of 42 U.S.C. 1981.
What happened to all the other appellants?
Well, the other appellants, the counsel who represented all of the plaintiffs in the district court filed an appeal initially on behalf of all the appellants. He withdrew. Mr. Scaife is the only appellant who retained counsel, and the rest were dismissed. One, I believe, asked to be voluntarily dismissed, and the rest were dismissed pursuant to a rule to show cause when they did not file briefs.
I see. Thank you.
Specifically, in this appeal, we've narrowed down the issues where Mr. Scaife is seeking review of the summary judgment with respect to a series of suspensions that were imposed on him in late 1999 for purported instances of tardiness. Specifically, Mr. Scaife was subjected to a three-day suspension in late October and early November 1999 for alleged tardiness, and then a 29-day suspension. He actually served this 29-day suspension in early 2000. However, the major cause disciplinary notice that eventually led to the suspension was initiated in October of 1999. The suspension was officially imposed in December of 1999. That suspension, the now 29-day suspension, was imposed by Defendant Wallace. Now, there's a rather elaborate procedural history of the case. At the time summary judgment was granted, there was a third amended complaint pending, and there were, in fact, 14 plaintiffs in 11 different counts against 17 different defendants.
Well, to try to simplify, what evidence is in the record about similarly situated employees with similar records of tardiness who were treated more favorably but are not members of the protected class?
There were three white investigators who were identified by name by Mr. Scaife in his submissions in the district court. Now, we have to acknowledge that the district court submissions were not ideal in terms of organization or completeness, but the situation we have here is that the suspension issue was never addressed by the defendants in their summary judgment motion. In their initial presentation, submissions in support of summary judgment or seeking summary judgment, they focused only on a transfer that occurred in May of 1999 and then a redeployment which affected everybody in the section in November of 1999. They completely ignored the suspension issue. Now, in the response that was filed on behalf of Mr. Scaife, he responded to one of the arguments of the defendant, which was that there was no adverse action because there is a line of cases from this court that indicate that transfers or reassignments without some monetary loss or loss of status are not considered adverse actions for purposes of discrimination claims. However, Mr. Scaife was different from the other plaintiffs in that he did have the suspensions, and in his response to the summary judgment submissions, his attorney brought to the court's attention that he, in fact, had suffered the suspensions in 1999. what defendants, even in their reply, did not address the suspensions. They acknowledged that he had mentioned them, but they didn't offer any argument in terms of why they should be entitled to summary judgment with respect to the suspensions claims, while Mr. Scaife, in his response, had identified the similarly situated white investigators who had been treated more favorably. These are individuals who he said came...
In terms of tardiness?
They were... His point was they came and went as they pleased. They arrived early. They left. I mean, arrived late,
so
left early.
He's challenging these timesheets.
Yes, he's challenging the fact that other investigators who happen to be of a different race did not arrive at work on time, left early with the knowledge of supervisors, and were not reprimanded or suspended as he was. In addition,
so he says these times that they entered on the timesheet and were certified by the supervisor are fabrications.
Well, I don't know that we have timesheets showing that they arrived on time. He would.
Well, the ones I'm looking at show 7:30 and so forth. So before 8 o'clock, and then they all leave at 4 o'clock. So I assume that's the regular work day for these people.
Well, the point is that they were permitted to come in later.
But that would imply that the supervisors, signed a false document. I'm not saying that's impossible or anything. I'm just wondering whether that's your contention or that's implied in your contention that these are false statements.
I don't think our contention is that there was a falsification as much as that there was a double standard.
Well, I don't understand, because all of the other people except Scaife are shown as arriving in before 8 o'clock or at 8 o'clock and leaving at 4. So if these are accurate, then all these other people are on time, and he's the only one who keeps coming after 8 o'clock.
Well, that would be in terms of the timesheets that are part of the record. But Mr. Scaife was in a position to offer testimony and evidence that there were many occasions when white investigators would arrive late.
Well, so did he provide an affidavit or something in which he'd look at a timesheet to say this is false because on this day, October 17th, 1999, this fellow Schaefer arrived at 8:15 or something?
Well, what we have in the record is this. We have an affidavit from Mr. Scaife identifying investigators who he says frequently arrived late or left early with the knowledge of the supervisor. In interrogatory answers that were submitted in our part of the record, there is a list of times and dates that Mr. Scaife indicates that these white investigators arrived late. However, unfortunately, the answers to interrogatories are not verified, so we don't have a very good record on that issue.
Well,
and the time
in this record, you say other investigators, including Chris Helms, Dan Dadosky, and Ray Villa, all of who are white, regularly came in late to work and left early from work without discipline during the period 1999 through and including 2003.
That's correct. That's the statement, and that was made without there being any indication from the defendants that they intended to pursue the issue of the suspensions to summary judgment or any response from them in their reply to the information that was put in the record by Mr. Scaife. Please, the court, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Dwyer. Mr. Vasi?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Greg Vasey. I'm with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and I represent all of the appellees in this case, Cook County Sheriff's Office, as well as Mr. Wallace, who are the remaining defendants. I think court has centered and has pinpointed what the problem is with this case and with the appeal in this case. And I think Ms. Dwyer is being kind by saying that the summary judgment submissions in this case were not ideal. I think there is a serious problem with the evidentiary support with all of the statements submitted by the defendant, the plaintiffs, with respect to satisfactory work performance, as well as the existence of similarly situated employees who are outside the protected class. In our brief, we pointed out several paragraphs in the Statement of Additional Facts submitted by Mr. Scaife, and that would be 24, 25. I think erroneously we pointed out that it was 28 and 29, when I believe it's actually 29 and 30. So I would point that out to the court. With respect to similarly situated employees, Mr. Scaife did put facts, or what would be purported facts, into the record, including what Your Honor said. Other investigators, including Chris Helms, Dan Nadolski, and Ray Villa, all white male investigators with DCSI, regularly came into work and left early from work without discipline from 1999 through and including 2003. And then I believe the citation there, the 16A, is Mr. Scaife's affidavit. So really this is, we have no problem with Mr. Scaife making these remarks, but it's strictly a conclusion that he's saying is nothing more than what would be said in a complaint in this case, and that's the objection we made during the summary judgment, and that objection remains today. It's a conclusory allegation. It doesn't pinpoint, in addition to specifics about when these individuals came in late or what days or whether the supervisors actually knew that they came in late. None of that information is contained, and therefore it's really just it's a conclusion that is no help to the district court, and it is really no help here. The same thing with number 25, between November 1999 excuse me, to June 2002, the terms and conditions of my employment were significantly different and less favorable than for white employees. Again, there's no support for that. It is strictly a conclusion. Number 29 is Scaife was disciplined for reasons that white employees on his shift and performing the same duties were not similarly disciplined. I can go on. I'm not going to go through all the facts, but there is no support, evidentiary support for any of those conclusions. And that's the record that Judge Hibbler dealt with in the district court, and that's the same record that this court is dealing with. And it's the same thing for allegations of that Mr. Scaife was performing his duties to the legitimate satisfaction of his employer. That would be number 4, 11, and 21, where again he strictly makes conclusions saying that he was performing up to the satisfaction of his employer. Those are the issues in this case. Mr. Scaife has brought up in his brief possibility that there was a sua sponte decision by Judge Hibbler, and we've addressed that in our brief. All of those things that he claims was sua sponte were all included in the summary judgment response. All of those facts regarding satisfactory work performance, or what they believe to be facts supporting that there was a satisfactory work performance and that there were similarly situated employees who were being treated more favorably. I guess the inference is that had it been presented in a different way, they would have, instead of stated conclusions, they would have stated facts supported by evidence. And I don't think that that's a legitimate argument. I don't think there's been anything brought to this court's attention that would warrant reversal of this the district court's ruling. We would ask for affirmance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vase. Ms. Dwyer, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Your Honors, with respect to what counsel refers to as conclusions, those are facts. And, you know, the question...
They're kind of vague, though. I mean, what do you do with those facts? There's no time, as he emphasized, no dates or times or indications whether the supervisor was aware of the tardiness. So what do you do with that?
Well, the problem
is... You couldn't really get a jury verdict, could you?
The problem is that there was nothing to respond to. The defendants did not raise the issue of the suspensions as one in which they were entitled to summary judgment. And in the response, plaintiff's counsel...
Judge can render summary judgment sua sponte. He always has to give an opportunity to the party, the loser, to respond. So,
and I think that's the problem. And, you know, we cite Southern Illinois Riverboat Casino Cruises and discuss it in our brief. And I think all three of the concerns that this court had in that case...
What would you have put in? I mean, how would you have fleshed out this affidavit?
Had I prepared an affidavit, I certainly would have put in specifics as to the dates and times that the other individuals had come in late or left early, who they reported to, what these supervisors, whether they had knowledge of it, attached timesheets that reflected that if they were available. Certainly, more specificity would have been better. But faced with no argument or evidence supporting an entitlement
to
summary judgment.
Did these people depose these white people?
I don't know that the co-workers were, but some of the supervisors were, and unfortunately none of their depositions are not in the record, and only portions of Mr. Scaife's deposition are, which I believe there were other portions that probably would have been beneficial.
Why weren't their depositions made a part of the record?
That I don't know. It was a different attorney, and I'm not sure what the issue was there. But it is our position that given the defendant's failure to raise the issue at all, the information that was provided should have been sufficient to defeat summary judgment.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Dwyer.
Thank you.
And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.